This is episode number 796 of the Secret Identity Podcast, and today in What's New, we're going to talk about Sabrina the Teenage Witch, The Avengers, Lobo, and an upcoming convention. Our comics this week will be First Strike number 1, Marvel Generations Hawkeye, and The Evil Within, The Interlude number 1. And this week's creator spotlight is our buddy Don Cardenas, the artist on PAX of the Lowcountry, who I spoke with recently about the upcoming Kickstarter for the collected version of that series.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
The Human Torch is denied a bank loan.
This is all your fault, you!
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Why do you keep staring at me?
You have 20 seconds to comply.
God, clean the whole fun.
And welcome, everybody, to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letender here, as always, with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful, Matthew A. Herring. How are you doing today, sir?
Doing well, but I think I hit the wall.
You hit the wall?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Not drinking soda, trying to cut down, and I just hit the wall.
Now, what is the shake concoction that you're drinking?
I don't
drinking?
Know, some garbage my wife gave me. Isogenics.
Isogenics is a thing that she's doing, and she has convinced you to give it a shot.
Yeah, so I have to drink two of these shakes a day, and they're not horrible.
Do they supplement meals, or do they take the place of meals?
Yeah, they take place of a meal.
Mm,
it's high
how
protein.
How are you feeling about that?
It isn't so bad with it sucks. I want a cheeseburger.
Yeah.
But it isn't so bad when you're at work.
Right.
Like, I'm having it. I also had a candy bar, some healthy Isogenics bar that's doesn't have sugar in it, but that's probably the
best. It's raining
thing.
Cats and dogs outside right now.
Oh, like, yeah.
People who have listened to this show for years, people who know you are, the people are screaming in the streets right now.
Yeah,
rain is coming up from the ground.
It is. So, so I'm trying. I told my wife I'd do it 9 days.
You did that because your wife asked you to.
Yeah.
I love that.
She keeps talking about, I don't want to be taking care of you when I'm old and we're old and you're decrepit and
But you're giving
apart.
It a shot. You're giving it a good faith effort.
I'm not worried about being decrepit and falling apart. I am not worried about that.
No.
Not at all.
You're going to go out with a bang.
I'm going with a, yep, pillow on the face.
A cheeseburger.
Out of here.
A bag full of Taco Bell
breakfasts.
Yep. In a bathtub of Mountain Dew.
Oh, perfect.
We know that. But it's nice that you're doing that for her.
I'm trying. I
appreciate that. You know what's exciting, Matthew? Sabrina the Teenage Witch is returning to television. The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina is a one-hour dark drama horror series that will air on the CW during the 2018-2019 season. The show comes from Archie Comics CCO Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa. It will be directed by Lee Tolland, Krieger of Riverdale, Greg Berlanti, Sarah Schechter, John Goldwater, Aguirre-Sacasa, and Krieger will executive produce. It will be based on the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina comic book series from Aguirre-Sacasa and artist Robert Hack, which is a darker take on the classic Archie Comics character. So, Sabrina's coming to TV.
I am very excited.
And it is not the Melissa Joan Hart version.
Which was great in its own.
Oh, it was absolutely great.
However,
I don't think Nick Bakay will be voicing any characters in this one.
I don't think Salem's going to be all cute.
I don't think so either, because we have read The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, and it is a much darker than even Afterlife with Archie take. Like, this is Afterlife with Archie is like, haha, isn't this funny with like zombies versions of the Archies? Sabrina's like, hey, look at this Satan ritual where you've got demons ripping people's faces off and everything like that.
Yeah,
like,
you've it got- is. There's a lot of bad stuff in the Sabrina comics and the just some of the stuff they do. Like,
I
always
think aunts,
about
dude, who are like,
yeah, they're nasty.
Oh, dude, like, it's so good. Like,
and
it's such a
remember what
horror
they did to Harvey's
series.
Parents.
Yeah, it's such
That's
a horror
stuff,
series.
Yeah.
Like, compared Afterlife with Archie is most definitely a horror series, but I think with Afterlife with Archie, you're like, these characters, I care about them, and horrible things are happening to them, and that's what is the emotional pull of Archie. Sabrina, she is a very sympathetic character in the Sabrina series because you realize that her entire life and all of the people that are around her are awful.
Yeah, and it's
everyone
manipulated,
is awful.
And she's a pawn.
And she is being torn between, like, absolute pure evil and trying to maintain some semblance of humanity. Yep. And it is – you are rooting for her because everyone around her is just absolutely completely evil.
Yep. I described Sabrina as – it made Afterlife with Archie look like an Archie comic.
Yeah, it doubled down, like it tripled down. You were like, oh, that first Archie series was pretty scary. What about Sabrina? Holy crap.
Holy, and a boob. There was a boob in it.
There was a boob, but wasn't it with...
It was like a witch boob. It was a witch boob.
All right. We're going to move on from that. Anyway, Sabrina coming to television is going to be awesome, and it's going to air after Riverdale. And given what they've done with Riverdale in terms of the tone of that show... I can only imagine that we're going to get a pitch-perfect Sabrina series. So I don't know that they'll be able to go as dark content-wise as what we've seen with the comic book. But then again, American Horror Story is doing all right with whatever it wants to do. Channel, although I think those are more like straight-up cable stations. So we'll have to see where the line is drawn around that. But that's super exciting. And in other news, Matthew, the Avengers are going to go weekly.
Oh, are they?
Marvel Comics has revealed new details about their legacy story, Avengers No Surrender, a weekly event that will merge the three monthly Avengers titles beginning with Avengers number 675 in January. The new details were revealed in Marvel's Foom.
I saw Foom. I saw that and was very excited.
A promotional magazine that arrived in direct market comic book stores Tuesday and will be available to readers beginning Wednesday. I think that was this week. U.S. Avengers and Uncanny Avengers will end, at least for the duration of No Surrender, which will be written by Mark Waid, Al Ewing, and Jim Zub, who say plans for the weekly series have been in the works for nearly a year. This series will also feature the return of some classic Avengers characters not seen much in recent years, including Living Lightning, and Jarvis. Avengers No Surrender will run for 3 months, with artist Pepe Larraz drawing the first month's issues, Kim Jacinto drawing the second month, and Paco Medina will take over in month three. It's unclear whether the titles will remain a single series and whether that series may stay weekly in the style of Amazing Spider-Man's Brand New Day era after No Surrender wraps. Waid did confirm that at least in terms of his core Avengers roster, the lineup would change as of Avengers number 675. Foom number 1 was released to retailers this week and will be available to fans on September 27th. So as you listen to this, which is now a week old, you are able to get Foom number 1. So you're excited about Foom coming back?
I love Foom. Foom was a great magazine when I was a kid. It was the internet of comic book news before the internet.
So now we're getting Foom back, which is really sort of that nod to nostalgia that Marvel is going for right now. The idea of a handful of Avengers books being melded into one Avengers book appeals to me. The fact that it's weekly...
That's a lot to keep up with.
Maybe twice a month is okay, but if that book is going to be a $5 book or something like that, I don't know about that. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I'm actually starting to really not enjoy the bi-weekly books or the bi-monthly books that DC are doing, the bi-weeklies. I'm not enjoying that because I need a break. I'm enjoying when there's a long time in between because that makes me excited about the story.
The problem I have with the books that are coming out so frequently, and it's a good problem to have, is I just get backlogged.
And when you fall behind, you fall behind.
You fall behind like several issues at a time. And so I've had to like pick a title every other week and say, okay, this week I'm just going to catch up on Batman.
Yeah.
Like I'm caught up on Batman. But like right now, I'm behind on The Flash. I'm behind on Superman. And that's a lot of issues that I have to sort of make up. And so... That's the only problem with that, but I guess it's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
And those books are not $5 a piece.
No, they're
not. And I'm not saying that this one's going to be either, but I'm wondering if we're combining three Avengers storylines, if that's going to be a higher priced book, my money would be on yes.
No, it's not going to be 35 cents.
In other news, DC Comics is collecting Keith Giffen and Alan Grant's take on the Gun for Hire Lobo. Lobo by Keith Giffen and Alan Grant, Volume 1, features stories written by Giffen and Grant and artwork by Simon Beasley, Dennis Cowan, and Giffen. The cover sports artwork by Simon Beasley. The 320-page trade paperback will be in stores January 24th. MSRP is $24.99. That's reasonable.
Very good.
For a 320-page book. The volume reprints classic 90s stories, including Lobo 1 through 4, Lobo Paramilitary Christmas Special. That should be a real treat. Lobo's Back, Lobo Blazing Chain of Love, and Lobo Convention Special. Lobo was co-created by Griffin and Roger Slifer, or Slifer, as a gonzo parody of characters like Punisher and Wolverine. The motorcycle-riding bounty hunter made his first appearance in 1983 in the Omega Men number 3, and he has had a number of crossover appearances over the years. Earlier this year, DC collected Lobo's adventures with The Mask. See new collection stars The Mask, Grifter, Lobo, and the Joker. And he appeared opposite the Roadrunner in a DC Looney Tunes crossover. Several attempts have been made to bring the character to the silver screen, but that hasn't happened yet.
Now, do you remember the New 52 attempt at redesigning Lobo?
I remember that it did not go over well with people, which is unfortunate because, I think that in the context of the New 52, that was designed to be a re-envisioning mm-hmm. of that character. And that happened with a lot of the characters. Like, a lot of the characters got redesigns in the New 52, but we're done with New 52 now. We're back with Rebirth. We're back to meat and potatoes, traditional DC superheroes in a lot of ways. So it makes sense that Lobo would be making a comeback. However, this is a collection of stories that already existed with him.
And those collections are always fun because you're going to get the best of the best.
In our last piece of news, I just wanted to remind people that if you were in the Springfield area, the Bing Comic Con is coming on the 28th of October. Go to bingcomiccon.org, get more information about that. But that is a show that is very near and dear to our hearts because it is a very local show for us.
Yep.
So you can find out more information about that on our website as well as we get a little bit closer to that. So that's going to do it for our news. Now let's talk about comics, Matthew. And the book I'm going to start off with today, and as I mentioned it, I am not prepared because I have it here on my tablet, so I have to call it back up here, is First Strike from Hasbro. Now, I cannot remember the last time that I read a Transformers book, but I did know, and we have talked about in our news segments for a period of time lately, that there is a lot of crossing over going on in the Hasbro comics universe that IDW is currently putting out there. And so First Strike is an event that involves characters from G.I. Joe, Mask, ROM, Micronauts, and the Transformers.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first issue, which is really pretty much just G.I. Joe and the Transformers. But your creative team here is Margaret Scott and David Rodriguez are the writers on this one. Max Dunbar is the artist, colors by Ander Zarate, letters by Tom Long, and the editor is David Hedgecock on this one. So First Strike basically starts off with the premise of Optimus Prime saying, I am annexing Earth into the Cybertronian Council of Worlds. So as we know, the Transformers have been on our world, battling the Decepticons, Autobots, Decepticons, all this kind of stuff. Well, Optimus felt like it would be safer for our world if we became part of the Cybertronian Council of Worlds. Then we would officially have the full protection of Cybertron. We would be one of their allies. And so that is sort of the starting point for this story. Now, apparently, this story is spinning out of the G.I. Joe book, the Transformers book, the Mask book, all of these other books.
Micronauts miniseries that's going on right now.
Yeah, all of that stuff. And so I haven't been reading any of those. And so I kind of felt in some ways like I was doing a little bit of catch up as I got into this. But the basic storyline is clear enough because it starts off with Prime saying that. And you have a reporter who's saying with those two sentences, the alien known as Optimus Prime set events in motion that have changed the world forever. Some welcome him as Earth's savior. Others denounce him as a tyrant. Either way, Earth has chosen to join the Council of Worlds. But the question remains, who will represent us? And so you have essentially a meeting on Cybertron as this book opens, where you have the first representative of Earth to be a liaison to Cybertron that is going to be named. That's what this whole thing is about. And so you have the Joes that are watching this. You have a lot of the Transformers that are on Cybertron watching this. And they have actually created a dome on Cybertron where they have pumped in oxygen in order for humans to be able to be there to witness this event and to also be on Cybertron. And so at this point, though, Starscream is the official leader of Cybertron, which I thought was very interesting. He is the supreme ruler of Cybertron, and he's going to come out and he's going to give a big address because this is the point in time where they are having this this whole meeting here. And I'm trying to figure out who they named as their person who's going to be the ambassador. But That's irrelevant because before the thing even starts, as you have the press sort of getting set up and everything, you then cut to Lemuria, which is the current Joe headquarters, and they are monitoring all of the feeds that are happening on Cybertron. So you've got Scarlet, you've got Doc, you've got Quick Kick, you've got Lady J, and you've got Roadblock, who are there with Skywarp, who is a Decepticon jet who is like part of the Joes now. He's been showing up in the G.I. Joe book, and that was one of the issues that I reviewed. I think I reviewed the first issue where he was in that. And they're kind of bemoaning the fact that they're sitting there on monitor duty watching what's going on. And Scarlet's kind of telling them, you guys need to be sharp because this is a big deal. I don't want to hear any more belly aching because we need to keep an eye out because anything could go wrong today. This is a big day for Cybertron. This is a big day for Earth. We got to make sure that we're ready to go if something that happens. And so as they're talking, all of a sudden, you have Starscream who comes up to the podium and says, my fellow cyber, and before he even finishes, Tronians, there is a huge missile strike that comes down and blows up the podium. All of the monitors at Joe headquarters are filled with flames, and you see everybody running for cover. So Optimus is trying to get Starscream and some of these other guys out of there. They're trying to make sure that the humans are there. Oh, and they did name Marissa Fairborn is the ambassador to Earth. They're trying to get her to safety. Flint is on security detail up in Cybertron. He's trying to get her to safety. You have Talon and Spike, who are also on the Joe team up there. And so they're trying to figure out, where did that attack come from? Who is trying to sabotage this meeting? And so they're trying to get all the robots as well, all of the Transformers, out of the area. And so you have Windblade, who is kind of like a glider, who is going over and saying to what looks to be a Transformer over off in the distance, hey, you got to get out of here. Things are getting crazy. You know, you got to get to safety. And all of a sudden, this thing turns around, and its chest opens, and like 1,000 ninjas come flying out of it. And she's like, sweet, Solus Prime. And she gets out of there. She's like, Ironhide, we've been compromised. Any civilian bot not running is carrying some kind of enemy combatant, swarms of them. And it's just swarms of ninjas that come flying out of these robots. And then as that happens, you see another one of these robots open up. And standing with a couple of dreadnoughts is someone who is, I forget what his name is, but he looks like almost like a knight, but he has a skull and crossbones on the front of his outfit. And he's there with the dreadnoughts, and he's saying, I want you guys to get out there, and I want you to cause mass panic. Your job is to cause chaos. And so they get out with the ninjas. They're attacking everybody, and they're just trying to get everybody running in different directions. Meanwhile, you have the Joes, whose feeds have been cut, and they see that Scarlet knows who this particular person is. And she's saying, that's Baron Ironblood. The last thing that we saw before the feeds got cut was this guy, Baron Ironblood. And you guys know that recently he was unmasked as General Joe Colton, who I believe is the original G.I. Joe.
That was a yeah. So I remember the name from that.
The original G.I. Joe is now teaming up with people formerly of Cobra affiliation in order to attack Cybertronians. And so Scarlet is saying, you guys need to get everybody all together. She said, the greatest man I've ever known just became an intergalactic terrorist, and I want to know why. So that's the big mystery as the story starts, is that you have the original G.I. Joe who is leading this attack on Cybertron. And so they're going through and they're saying, we looked at the feeds from the videos that we captured before, and there's actually a bunch of other people there. We saw Destro in the footage. We saw Storm Shadow in the footage. And so you have Scarlet who's like, there's got to be a reason why he's doing this. And in looking at what the attack looked like, it was very chaotic, which is not his style. He's very strategic. So there's a bigger plan at play here. We have to figure out what it is. She's like, I need more information. But we're going to go and find out where these guys were headquartered at. So she leaves Dial Tone to kind of pull more information about whatever was on the video feed. And they go and they track down in the Swiss Alps a base that they believe that Colton was operating out of. So it is Scarlet and Lady J and Roadblock and Quick Kick and Doc who all go there and they hack their way into this place. And when they get inside, there's laser traps and everything. And they're trying to get inside wherever Colton was staying because Scarlet thinks she's going to find whatever the plan that he had was working on. They'll find the info there. So they end up battling their way through some soldiers that were left behind. And they get into the area that was Colton's office. And Scarlet knows that he doesn't use computers, so she ends up finding buried under a tile in the floor this thumb drive, and it is fingerprint activated, and the fingerprint is keyed to her. And so she's like, why would he have keyed it to me? And she opens it up, and underneath it is a letter written on paper, and she unfolds it, and it says, Scarlett, I can only hope you're reading this. I would hate to think that I spent all that time training you for you not to make it here first. The hardest part of this whole mess is knowing that you'll be the one to try and stop me. So I see this as my chance to tell you this isn't what I wanted. It has been my greatest privilege to watch you go from being a recruit to the brave leader I knew you'd always become, but it doesn't matter how brave you are when you're against a 30-foot-tall war machine. This piece of theirs is a breath, and when the Cybertronians' war starts again, it will be the end of us, even if they don't intend it. After all, how many ants have you stepped on today without noticing that you've stepped on any? Think about that before you come and chase me. And so that's how this particular issue winds down, is that she's realizing that his belief now is that even if the Autobots are friendly toward us, the carnage that's going to be caused by their continuing war with the Decepticons or anybody else that threatens Cybertron is eventually just going to crush humanity. So the only way that we're going to be able to survive as a species is we're going to have to take out the Cybertronians, and we're going to have to destroy Cybertron. And that's the way the issue ends. So it sounds like in the upcoming issues, we're going to be getting some characters from those other properties that are joining the fight to try and stop this Rogue Joe from taking down Cybertron. So pretty cool. I think if you've been reading those books, it probably makes a little bit more sense to you. I have not been keeping up with them, but I still found the basic premise of it easy enough to follow. So it's definitely worth checking out. And this is sort of the next phase of the comics really coming together to form a shared universe.
Very nice. So you talked about not knowing about some of the stuff going into this. This is a book that I have no idea what is even going on in this one. This is Marvel Generations, Hawkeye and Hawkeye. So we got a guy Hawkeye, who I know, and a girl Hawkeye, who I know nothing about, but apparently there's a girl Hawkeye.
Well, she's been with the Young Avengers. Is it Kate Barton?
Yes.
So she has been around for a while.
Is she related to Clint?
No, wait, is it Kate Barton? I don't
Bishop,
know if it's
Kate Bishop.
Kate Bishop, I'm sorry, it's Kate Bishop. No, she's not. But she has been the one who's sort of been the new Hawkeye for a while now. And she showed up in the series that was drawn by David, who was it? I forget who it was drawn by, but the critically acclaimed Hawkeye series, she was in that with Clint.
With the cool covers.
With the very cool covers, yes, and the cool art style. And I can't remember the artist that was the person on the book. But she has been around for a while, and I believe she was part of the Young Avengers. And so she has become, I would say, with probably newer readers, as well known as the original Hawkeye.
So Kelly Thompson's the writer. Stefano Raffaello, is that Raphael, is the artist on this one. And this is a book that, again, I know nothing about. The art is great in here, by the way. But we start out at an island inn. That's all it says, an island inn.
Okay.
And you have the Hawkeye girl kind of narrating it, and she's talking about the fact that she doesn't even know why she's here, where she is, but she knows that she is a great archer and that she's a famous marksman and that she is going to get out of this no matter what. So she's very confident in her abilities. So she hears something behind her. She turns around to draw an arrow, and it is Golden Age – or not Golden Age Hawkeye, but Hawkeye that we all know and love with the flowing, you know, very circus-looking costume.
Uh-huh.
And she goes, Clint. And he goes, how'd you know my name? And you see in the background that this definitely looks like a place that's not of this earth. The birds are flying all over the place. It almost looks like the Savage Land, but you know it's not because it's an island.
Can I ask a question before we go any further? Because this came up with the other Generations book that you read too. So these are just supposed to be what ifs, these Generation books, or in the wake of Secret Empire, was the world thrown into flux or something like that?
I think a lot of that. But I also think that they're just trying to find any way to bridge old and new and talk about that legacy.
Right.
But like you're saying, like, yeah, when the world went
I'm just
changed,
not sure what, like, the framing device is for it. Like, is it that they're all trapped in limbo? Is it that they're all having a shared dream? Is it
I think that's
just
what it might
if?
Be more of is when the world – because it really explained it really well in the Captain America one, that the world when there was that few seconds where everything changed.
Okay.
all of a sudden, this is might be
so basically,
when it happens.
In the cosmic rewriting of the Marvel Universe, they're like ships passing in the night over different timelines and different realities, and they're having a chance to meet one another.
So we're going to go with
We're going to go with that.
I like that.
Okay, good.
So Clint's like, how do you know my name? And she goes, come on, I know who you are. But why are you wearing that stupid costume? And he's like, look, I don't recognize you. I don't know who you are, but are you after me too? And, you know, she's like, what do you mean, am I after you? What's going on? And she's like, well, I don't know what you're running from or what you're doing here like this. I don't know where I am, but you can call me Kate. And he's like, okay, so why don't you have a belt like the others? And she goes, I took it off. And he is thinking, she's thinking like just a belt, like one of those garish 60s, 70s superhero belts. He's talking about pouches. Yes. He's talking about a belt that he's wearing that has some little like target on it because he's part of a hunt and villains are coming after him.
Oh, it's like Gymkata.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
When you meld the karate and gymnastics, you get Gymkata.
I haven't watched Gymkata in a while.
Love that movie.
It's great.
Oh my gosh.
It's great. It's amazing.
I'm waiting for that to come on Blu-ray.
Parmistan? Is that the name of the country?
Yeah. With one satellite dish. And a pommel horse right in the middle of town.
Oh, so great.
Kurt Thomas can do his flips and kicks.
So great.
Quick, run down this alley because there's parallel bars that are set up like fire escapes.
Use your environment.
Yep. So all of a sudden, Clint shoots an arrow at her and she turns around and it is some villain going, oh, you got me. And he shoots him right in the belt. And he's like, oh, dang it. That was crazy. And then he disappears and she goes, well, that was pretty dramatic. Thanks for the save. And he goes, okay, so obviously you're not a part of this. And then the two of them sit down and they start hashing out what is going on. She, you know, he's like, so who are you and what's going on? Why are you wearing my color? And she tries to explain that, you know, in a different world, in a future, in a reality, wherever it is, you and I befriend each other. You help me and teach me, you know, how to shoot a bow and arrow. And then he starts to explain, you know, why he's doing what she's doing. But he can't explain anything to her that she doesn't turn around and go, yeah, I know that story. I remember you telling me that. And she'll add to it. And then she goes, can I try on your mask? So he takes off the mask, puts on his mask. And she goes, how does it look? And he's like, yeah, not that great. And she goes, well, whatever. I'm rocking this thing. So as they're talking and thinking about things, he still is not trusting of her. And then all of a sudden, somebody materializes. She shoots the arrow, hits it right in the thing, and it is Boomerang. Now, there was a Boomerang in Marvel. I know it's not Captain Boomerang, but it's Boomerang, and he's all bent out of shape because he just now got zapped and sent away because apparently everybody's being sent to hunt Hawkeye. And Hawkeye's explaining that it is the worst of the worst villains, and not worst as in bad. These are just the worst villains. So you're kind of anticipating and expecting some fun craziness to start happening. But as they start making their way through the jungle, they end up in this place that looks like an old Mayan ruin. They get down there and they start thinking, well, maybe this is where we can get out because Hawkeye's talking about how this is where he first remembers where he was. And then all of a sudden, the swordsman shows up. And now this is right after he and Hawkeye had their split. So he's not too thrilled with them, but they're willing to talk. And she's like, you know, oh, yeah, I know that the swordsman, he's the one who kind of taught you everything. And as the three of them are there together, they're talking about starting an alliance, but Hawkeye wants nothing to do with it. And they're trying to get out. And as they start going through, she starts exploring some of these caves. He starts going through some of the jungle areas. And then all of a sudden, the Taskmaster shows up.
Love the Taskmaster.
And it's the coolest thing about this, you think of the Taskmaster, you think of that crazy villain that is a little psychotic that will kill people. This is the 70s Taskmaster that's kind of a buffoon. And he comes down, jumps
down. Did he have the photographic memory back then of where he could like just see somebody's fighting style once and immediately ape it?
Yep, because he says, I have photographic references. Oh, okay. I see your moves, and I can duplicate it perfectly. And then Hawkeye kicks the crap out of him.
Oh.
And then grabs an arrow out of his sash, out of his quiver, and jams it in the target, and then he disappears. And then, as they're going through, she's walking through the Mayan ruin or the Mayan looking ruins, comes across somebody, fights him, takes him down, and now she is fighting somebody that she knows of. But as she's teamed up with some girl. I don't exactly know who it is. But as they start talking, the Swordmaster shows up. And all of a sudden, she gets slashed in the face with a card. A playing card, Brian. Who do you think is now showing up?
A playing card.
Bullseye.
Oh, in the Marvel Universe, yes.
So now Bullseye shows up. She is now forced to fight Bullseye. And Bullseye is going after the swordsman. He's pulling out a knife. He's ready to try to stab and kill him. And then as that battle's going on, she shoots an arrow, hits him, and sends him away. And now you have the four of them all talking because they're finally all together. And then the two of them hit their own things to leave and say, you two need to stay here and be safe by yourself. And as Hawkeye and the girl Hawkeye are talking, they're talking about all the things that are going on. She says, you know, I haven't been completely honest with you. My name isn't Hawkus, because that's what she says the name. She goes, my name is Hawkeye. And she spends the last few pages explaining her legacy, what she is bringing to the table, and why she is as much a Hawkeye as the original Hawkeye. And then she goes, you know, Clint, you're a great friend. You always have been. You're a good mentor. And then she's like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. And then she disappears. And that leaves Hawkeye on a rock just sitting there going, huh, that's crazy. So that is how that ends. So she disappears where it says the end. And you turn the page and you see that Hawkeye 13 is going to have the two of them together. But it was another great kind of, I see what they're doing. Every one of these books is a current version of a legacy hero. And they have their moments. And then the last few pages, like when you had the Hulk issue, you had Amadeus Cho really kind of saying what his legacy is in this and that he's as worthy as the Bruce Banner Hulk and tries to even help him. So a lot of fun with these. I think there was a Spider-Man one and I missed it.
Huh.
So I've got to find that one.
I'll have to keep my eye out for that one. You had me at Spider-Man.
Yes.
All right. Well, we are now in October as people listen to this episode. So it's time to start bringing the horror, Matthew. One of the games that I am very excited to jump into after I finish the first one is The Evil Within 2, which is coming out on Friday the 13th, which I'm excited about. However, I've been playing through the original game, which came out in 2014, I believe, The Evil Within. And it's a great horror game. I'm doing a series for Co-op Critics where I'm playing through the game. But this comic series is sort of set in between the two games. It's called The Interlude. And it is written by Ryan O'Sullivan, art by Zyman Kudransky and Damian Worm, colors by Guy Major, and letters by Simon Boland. And the editor on this one is Tom Williams. It's from Titan Comics. And so Titan Comics has been doing some pretty good adaptations lately.
Yeah.
And so as we start this one, you have the main character of the game is Detective Sebastian Castellanos, who in the first game, it started with him responding to a distress call at a mental hospital. And when he gets there, everything goes completely takes a left turn from there, and we'll get into that in a few minutes. But here you see him sort of standing outside of a building, and it might be the hospital, but when he steps off the curb, he almost gets run over by a car. And all of a sudden, someone calls his name, and he turns around, and it's his wife, and she's walking toward him. Her name is Myra, and he's saying, thank God you're okay. And she's saying, someone's gone. She's gone. Someone took Lily, which is his daughter. So it starts off with his wife saying, our daughter's been taken. And now you see that he's saying, I don't understand, you know, and she's saying, what's to understand? Our daughter's missing and we need to find the person that took her. And so now we cut to him sitting in the precinct and he is meeting with the shrink at the precinct. And he's going through all of the stuff with this guy. He's saying, it's difficult to put into words. And the shrink is saying, I understand, please continue. You've been doing so well this week. And so now he starts explaining the events of the first game. And he's saying, all right, here's what happened. I showed up to this mental hospital with my partners. And when we got in there, all of a sudden, everything changed. Everything got weird. It was like we were walking around in a dream or something like that. And as time went on, I was getting teleported from like place to place, but I didn't know how I got there. And I didn't really know where I was. And it was almost like we were trapped in someone else's mind. And the only way to get out was to find the person whose mind that we were trapped in. And I was able to get out, but my partner wasn't able to get out. And I don't even know how I ended up back in our world and all this stuff. And as he's telling the psychiatrist or the clinician that, Clearly, it sounds crazy.
Mm.
And so then he's talking to one of the other detectives he works with, and he's saying, you know, I told the shrink everything, and I'm pretty sure he thinks I'm nuts. And his partner, Tobias, is saying, well, given what you put in your report, I'm not surprised. He said, I tried to pull every trick I could to stop it from reaching the chief. And so you're seeing that after the events of the first game, he's kind of lucky to still have his job, because when he started telling people what actually happened, they were like, yeah, you're not fit for duty anymore. And so the guy that he's working with now, he is seems to be a pretty decent guy, because he wants to keep him on the force and he wants to sort of look out for him. But he's like, the good news is we could take your mind off of all of that stuff, because we just got a new case. Two missing persons, one guy, one girl, possibly connected. I need you to help me with this. So they go and find the body of the first guy, and he is strung up upside down in this like abandoned building, and someone painted on the wall, looking to be in blood. Jack fell down and broke his crown. And he says, well, at least we know this guy's not missing. He looks like he's dead to me. And they go and they're examining the crime scene, and Sebastian, it's in a barn that they're in, ends up, you know, seeing some different clues. And later on, they decide that they're going to view some of the security footage. And so there's a lot of stuff that got picked up on camera that's kind of weird. And as he's kind of going through and thinking about all the clues that they found at this crime scene, he ends up in another conversation with his wife. And his wife is like, what are you working on other cases for? Our kid is missing. Why aren't you focused on our kid? And he's like, don't you think I have been? What do you think I've been doing for the last 3 months? I've called every favor I can into the police department. No one knows anything. And his wife is saying, well, then we can't trust anybody on the force. And he's like, oh, so now you think the cops are involved in our daughter's disappearance? And they end up getting in a fight, and she goes to bed. So he is sitting on the couch and he's watching TV, and all of a sudden he starts watching this video that looks like it's taking place in an attic somewhere. And then all of a sudden he's in that attic, and there's someone who is running away from him, and he's chasing them. And he ends up seeing what looks to be a killer, who, when the killer turns around, written in his shirt on in red is the words, Daddy, help.
Mm.
And he starts freaking out, and it looks like he's trapped in the middle of this video, and all of a sudden he blinks his eyes and he's in the car with his partner. And he's like, what the heck is going on? And his partner's like, oh, we're almost there. What are you talking about? Oh, we're almost at the apartment of the second victim where the body was found. So we're going to go there and check that out now. So you're seeing that this detective is like dipping in and out of reality, and he doesn't know how he's getting from one place to another, or like what's going on. He's losing time. He's losing memories. They get to this other apartment and they go in and find that there is a woman that has been killed. And while they're going around this apartment, they find writing on the wall that says, and Jill came tumbling after. So somebody's playing on the Jack and Jill nursery rhyme. But he also has a vision of this killer from the first game, which like there's a box on the floor and his body like grows out of the box. And so this thing starts chasing him and he jumps out the window. And the next thing you know, there's an ambulance there and they're checking to make sure that he's okay. And he's talking about how, I just saw some guy in the apartment and he was chasing me. And his partner's like, what? I don't know what you're talking about. We're trying to work this case. What's our next move? You know, maybe we need to go to another site or something like that. And so you're seeing that he feels like he's losing his mind. And then there is sort of this killer that's on the loose. And this killer used to work for the bad guys of the first video game, which is kind of hard to explain, but essentially there was a company that was working on a tool that would allow people's consciousnesses to meld together, almost like you could go into somebody else's dream and something like that. Mm-hmm. And this person who is now killing people in the real world is someone who used to work for this company. And who he's killing are people that also used to work for this company that may know about the kind of stuff that they were doing there. And so the detectives have no idea that this sort of conspiracy is going on. They're just looking at it as a straight murder. But clearly the fact that this detective Sebastian is involved is a problem, because he was caught up in the events that this company was involved in the first game. And so as the first issue ends, you see that the detective is still kind of reeling from the events of the first game. And you see that the company that created this technology is now on to doing something even more nefarious. And so that's how the first issue ends. So I think if you have no familiarity whatsoever with the games, this is going to make no sense to you whatsoever, because there are images and bad guys from the game that make appearances in here that you'll just have no frame of reference for. So I wish that it did a little bit better job kind of filling you in and getting you acclimated to the world of these games, because I think it would make people want to play the games. But as someone who is playing the first one and is excited for the second one, there's a lot of little tidbits here that I found pretty interesting. So it's worth checking out if you're interested in the games or have played any of the games. But if you have no frame of reference for it, it might be a little tough to get into.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's our new comics for this week, which brings us to this week's Creator Spotlight. And the Creator Spotlight we have this week is our friend Don Cardenas, who I first met, I believe he was a listener of the Thrash It Out podcast before he became a listener for Secret Identity, but he's been listening to Secret Identity for a while as well. Don is the artist on Packs of the Low Country, which is a book that I have talked about on this show before. There is going to be a Kickstarter for the collected edition of that book that Don and I, as I record this today, I am actually speaking to him tonight, but we'll pretend that I've already interviewed
him. And it's great.
It's amazing. So I can tell you, we talked about amazing things and we had a great time. I can tell you one thing we will be talking about is the fact that Don did the amazing artwork for the Power Chords podcast. So when you see the old school heavy metal and hard rock flavor that our banner has and our show art has for Power Chords, that's all Don.
Very good.
He did an amazing job with that. And he is a super talented musician. And we'll probably be talking about music and comics as we get into this particular interview. But the link for the Kickstarter will go up on Secret Identity as soon as it's live. So we'll be talking about that. And he is our Creator Spotlight for this week. So that is going to do it for this episode of the Secret Identity podcast. For Mr. Matthew Herring, this is Brian Letenry signing off. Have a great rest of your week. And we will talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.
Alrighty, and this is Brian here, and I am joined tonight by my good friend who I've never spoken to before except online until today, Don Cardenas. How you doing, sir?
Good, good. Yeah, good. Fine to talk to you.
I know, it's kind of amazing when you spend so much time on Twitter and on Facebook and in different discussions about music and art and comics and all that kind of stuff, and then finally get a chance to talk. And the cool thing is that we're getting a chance today to talk about a book that you not only co-created, but do the art on, and that is Packs of the Low Country, because you guys are doing a Kickstarter coming in November, right?
That is correct, sir.
So we talked about the first issue of Packs of the Low Country on Secret Identity, but for people who maybe didn't hear that show or haven't checked out the book yet, what is sort of the elevator pitch for Packs of the Low Country?
Well, Packs of the Low Country is set roughly 16 years after our world has been invaded by all these different types of monsters. And the protagonist of our story, Bastion, he grew up the majority of his life behind the walls of the last protected city known. So for most of his life, he's been waiting to get out there and see what's become of the world. So he gets a chance to join a mission that's going into the low country. And he soon lives to regret that decision pretty heavily.
Yeah, I think that's an understatement.
Yeah.
So John Dudley is the co-creator on this series with you. Were you guys longtime friends before you worked on this series? Like, what was your relationship before you started this book?
Actually, I had no dealings with John whatsoever. We had hooked up. There's another podcast. Sorry to bring up another podcast.
No, you go right ahead because we're wrapping ours up. So we need people to come and fill the void.
Well, this is a pretty long running one as well. 11 o'clock comics.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
They're, you know, a very big podcast
Sure. Amongst
the groups I go in anyway. And they had a very popular forum and I had just abandoned a project that I was trying to work on with a family member. And it just, I was working on my own thing, trying to figure out what I'm going to do next. And I just happened to click on a post John made about looking for an artist for something. And it had so many overlapping, not even just concepts, just like themes and even like almost direct character one-on-one comparisons to what I was developing on my own that I'm like, this is too weird to not be some sort of sign. Like I should probably look into this.
Yep.
So I just messaged him. He sent me a synopsis. Luckily he was also in Chicago. So we kind of met over some coffee, kind of talked about things, and that started from there. So that was about four and a half years ago, I want to say.
That's pretty amazing because that's not too dissimilar from how I ended up meeting my writing partner, Jolene, who it was over a podcast. I had her on my writing podcast because she was kind of developing a really great writing community with a lot of resources for writers and stuff like that. And then we just ended up, after talking, like hitting it off in terms of us being very influenced by the same things and having some really similar ideas about the types of story that we wanted to tell. And that's one of the beautiful things about these communities that spring up around podcasts and spring up around, you know, different shows and things like that, is you end up meeting like-minded people that you would never otherwise have run into in your entire life. And then this creative relationship starts, and it's kind of amazing. So in the 4.5 years that you guys have been sort of working together, like, how has that creative process evolved with the two of you? Clearly, you had a lot of similar ideas when you first started, but you'd never worked together before.
No, not at all. And that was one of the first things when we sat down together, was like, well, how do we want to work together? So John had pretty much had a script for the first issue done. And then he had just kind of plot sheets, really loose plot sheets for the remaining bits of the story. And I kind of dissected the first issue. John has been super gracious with suggestions from me. I think he's only ever refused one thing I wanted to change, which I don't know if I was wrong, but I can, I'd say, in terms of how many suggestions I've had, I can live with not having one.
Sure.
But, John's been, very gracious with, like, he understands the visual aspect of, comics deeply, and he entrusts me fully with whatever I'm like, you know what, I think this would play better if we do it like this. We should cut this scene, move it to this issue. It was originally going to be, I believe, 4-issue series. It ended up being 6 with a double-sized last issue.
Yeah, that tends to happen sometimes.
So, but that I don't blame anyone for that, except for me, because we're trying to pack a lot, no pun intended, into these issues. And for the last issue, I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to kind of go nuts and have like 6 or 7 splash pages. Like, I didn't get too many throughout the series. I just want to go nuts and just let everything blow up real nice.
Well, and the cool thing about that is that you, like, when you're getting to that point in the story where you're going to be wrapping it up, like, you don't want to leave anything on the table. I mean, you want to feel like when you have concluded your story, you got in just about everything you possibly could or wanted to, right?
Yeah. It's definitely, we definitely wanted to structure the ending to be an ending to this story.
Yep.
But that world still exists. So if we have the chance to go back and tell different stories in that world, great. But, you know, from page 1 to page 171 of this story, you have a complete beginning, middle, of end of the tale we're trying to tell.
And the thing about those initial stories is that there's so much heavy lifting to be done, right? Because you're world building and trying to tell the story in the first arc. And that, to me, is what, like, in my own series, like, that's what makes the first book in some ways my favorite book, but also makes the second book my favorite book, because by the time I get to the second book, a lot of that world building has sort of been put in place. And so sometimes I wonder if people appreciate how difficult that first story arc is, you know, when they read it as readers, because you are doing so much heavy lifting in those first story arcs to build the world, especially visually, and also tell this story within it. And so it's just, I can completely understand how you needed a little extra room to do that in the 6 issues.
Yeah. And I've developed a whole new understanding and appreciation for people who really nailed that first issue.
Yeah.
There's a writer, Donnie Cates, who's done a lot of great work. I think he's doing Doctor Strange now.
Oh, yeah.
For Marvel. But he's had a lot of great of his own creator-owned work. And every first issue of his I read, I'm like, man, this guy, like, knows how to hook you in on that first issue. Like, this guy's freaky good at that. And so I don't think that's – not having made my own comics previously, I don't think I would have really appreciated how well – those things are when they do happen.
Yeah, I mean, you once you
especially once you get that first full story done, you start to really, I know, at least for me, I feel like I just look at everything differently now. When you see the pieces of how people are fitting it together, and you're like, wow, that's a really interesting choice that they made, or, oh, I would have never thought to do that, or I can't believe they were able to pull that off in the first issue or something like that. So it is kind of cool when you can look at what maybe somebody else is doing and also kind of put that in your memory banks for next time, you know, because you learned so many lessons on that first series.
Yeah, I think for those who, you know, express their creativity through either their profession or their hobbies, I think it's always there's always this extra layer when you're trying to enjoy something of not having how would I do this
right
pop up. And whenever that doesn't happen with something and I'm just enjoying it for what it is, that's when I'm like, oh yeah, like I connected with this so hard. Like, whether it's, you know, you're listening to an album and you're like, you're trying to ananticipate what the next riff's going to be.
Right.
Or
exactly.
You're watching a movie, you're wondering what the twist is going to be. And it's when those things just fall away and you're just sucked up in that moment, like it's like nothing else.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. So you guys are about to embark upon this Kickstarter. Now, is this your first Kickstarter campaign?
It is not the first Kickstarter I am part of, but it will be the first one I will be co-running and, you know, majorly responsible for.
So there's a whole bunch of awesome stress and anxiety that comes along with that whole launch. But how long have you guys been planning to roll this Kickstarter out?
We've been roughly talking about it for the past 6 months. It's always been something in the back of our minds of something we wanted to do for a collection. And only recently, obviously, have we been like, all right, well, the sixth issue, my portion of it's done. We're waiting on colors. Once that's done, you know, what next? What do we do with this? So we're like, well, it's Kickstarter. So I, you know, spent untold hours researching.
Oh, yeah.
Every possible thing that can go wrong. And I know things are still going to go wrong. Getting quotes from printers, and just part of me, I like to tell my wife, and she unfortunately agrees with me, that I am never unhappy unless I'm never happy unless I'm unhappy with how much I have to do.
Yep.
So it's full fledged that right now. So it's satisfying to see these things start to come together and have your plan forming for this thing, but it's also like, oh my God. What happens, like, even though I've already checked, what happens if USPS decides to up their shipping rates magically somehow? Like, just these random things. So, but yeah, we're, preparing for the worst, hoping for the best.
But I think, though, too, as someone who has backed a bunch of Kickstarters, and my particular addiction is funding Kickstarters for role-playing games like that, it's ridiculous how many. All you have to do is show me like a nice hardcover of a role-playing game that I'll never have time to play, you know, because I barely have time to play even D&D once in a while. But my shelves are full because world building is like that's my jam. And so anything that is like, oh, it's a new set of rules and a new world. Oh, yeah, I'll fund the heck out of that. And so, but like, I think people realize by now that it's a roller coaster ride. Like, there are going to be things that come up, or there are sometimes complications. And I think hopefully people who are backing Kickstarters now are finally starting to realize that you're supporting the creation of something as opposed to pre-ordering something. And I think that, you know, that people who have, you know, participated in that community understand that they want to help things get made. And so I think they're kind of along for the ride. So, so obviously in putting this Kickstarter together, you're collecting the whole series. It's hardcover, right?
Yes. We're shooting for a hardcover.
And then as far as the, you know, incentives and different tiers and stuff like that, like, have you kind of mapped out what people can expect for different sort of funding levels?
Yeah. Yeah. That's been obviously the biggest thing of trying to figure out what to offer. So the plan is to produce at least 200 page hardcover graphic novel, complete with 171 story pages, several pages of add-on stuff that John's been writing, a lot of process stuff from my end, you know, from layouts to inks, working with our colorist to try to do a little couple of pages of his process, kind of show people, because, you know, we're all kind of junkies for that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And then though the pinups will be a stretch goal, I want to start talking about them now, because I've been thankful, and I'm thankful enough to have a lot of really talented friends. So, you know, I've got people like Brian Lovell, Tyrell Cannon, Ryan Lee, Kelly Williams, like all these really talented artists who are like, yeah, sure, let's do this. Who are, you know, super busy in their own right, working for, you know, Dark Horse, Valiant, DC, Marvel. So, you know, I'm really excited to see their takes on it. So, you know, we're going to try to do everything to make sure those can get included. I've been also working as part of the tiers. We're going to do the fun stuff, you know, the stickers, the we're trying to decide between an enamel pin or a patch. We're trying to figure out what kind of fits the project better, because I know enamel pins are very big right now and people love them and they're great. I love them. But also, like, you know, the heavy metal guy in me is like, a patch would be cool.
Yeah, I mean, you had me a patch. Yeah. Like, if this is, if you're taking a poll right now, you can put me down for a patch, because that is immediately, I was like, patch. Oh, okay. Yep. Absolutely. So, and that's a good, I think, segue into touching on the music stuff, because you are a musician and you have created a soundtrack for Pax of the Lowcountry. Like, people may not have known that, but you've done Riftober and everything. So if anybody follows you on Twitter, they will have seen that you're not shy about sharing your music, which I completely love. But talk about the soundtrack aspect of Pax of the Lowcountry. Like, what sort of made you want to create that, and what was kind of your influence in doing that?
Well, one of the influences visually I think about when I was working on Pax is, like, I wanted to, like, bring John Carpenter with a James Cameron kind of aggression.
Yep.
So obviously I was listening to a lot of John Carpenter, and as everyone knows, John Carpenter music is awesome.
It's amazing. It's the best.
And I was really always wanting to kind of marry my two passions. And I'm like, well, let me, like, just stuff would just be coming into my brain eventually. And I'm like, what song is this? What song is this? I'm like, oh, that's not anything. I guess I have to write this now.
Right. It's my song.
So naturally I just developed kind of like an initial intro music thing. I'm like, oh, let's do like one or two things. And then they just kept coming and coming and coming. And now I'm still working on it. I have a few songs up that I'll keep up until the launch of the Kickstarter. So if you go to SoundCloud and search Don Cardenas, or just go to my Twitter account at Don Cardenas Art, my profile has all my links. I keep everything super simple. So all right, now I have some of the tracks up there, but they will be pulled down and remixed and remastered a little bit. And I'm shooting to have around 15 to 20 tracks. So hopefully around a half hour to 45 minutes of music.
I love that, man.
It's going to be very, you know, I'm really trying to treat it like a soundtrack. So there'll be like recurring themes, you know, certain sounds are attributed to certain characters and things like that. You know, the lead female character in our book, like the theme song I'm writing for her is like, you know, I'm trying to give that Wonder Woman theme a run for its money.
Yep. I love it.
So, but yeah, the soundtrack is going to be all up in the tiers for the Kickstarter. And a fun thing I'm doing with that is we're going to have a CD option, which I'll burn a CD of the soundtrack, and then I'm going to put a plain white label on there with the PAX logo, and I'm going to sketch on it.
That is awesome.
And that'll be one of the tier, you know, an add-on to one of the tiers and things like that, so...
I love everything about that. I mean, you're speaking to my heart when you talk about Carpenter, because he, like, and you know, my problem is that I unfortunately surround myself with people that are much more talented than I am. So I see the stuff that you're doing with the PAX soundtrack. I see the stuff that Anthony has done with the Wasteland soundtrack for his stuff, which is absolutely amazing. And then mm-hmm. I'm in GarageBand trying to create Carpenter-esque themes for my book trailers that I'm putting up on YouTube that are just like so simple, but trying to evoke like that sort of theme, because I'm right there with you. Like, for me, every story I've ever written has a John Carpenter theme in my head. Mm-hmm. And so to take that and to meld that with a heavier element as well, I think is fantastic too. So I'm super glad that you're doing that. So, so obviously that, you know, in front of you right now, you have this Kickstarter. This is the big project right now. And that is going to consume most of your time. But if I'm not mistaken, are you not also doing Inktober?
I am. Yes, I'm going to be participating in Inktober. Previous years, I've had some success with completing the whole month. But this year will be the first year I'm following the official prompts put out by Jake Parker, the guy who kind of spearheaded the creation of Inktober and all that.
Yep.
Because I'm like, I have enough stuff I have to think about.
Right. You just let him pick the prompts.
Just tell me what I'm drawing. So, and the plan is to do that as a sketchbook. I don't know if I'll be posting like the time lapses of me working on it, or anything like that. But, in previous years, I had done like large jam pieces where I just pick a theme and I kind of fill in some squares, you know, like, oh, all Judge Dredd bad guys or all, you know, X-Men. And those were tons of fun. But, yeah, you spend much more time thinking about, well, who do I want to draw as opposed to like, oh, you know, punch is the word. All right. I'll draw what first thing comes to my brain.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes it's easier to follow those prompts, especially when you're being pulled in 15 different directions.
And then, yeah. And also I will also be doing Rifttober again.
Oh, good. I was going to ask you about that too. That's one of my favorites as well.
It's a thing last year I decided on a whim to like, you know, I hadn't been playing my guitar that much. I really needed to get back into practice of playing it every day. So every morning I would wake up, I would sit down, have my cup of coffee before the baby got up and, you know, throw on a drum beat, mess with the tempos, kind of figure something out and give myself a half hour from start to finish to write something good, bad, whatever. So, and what I didn't know is that Rifttober was already a thing, but it was with vocalists.
Well, the thing I loved about yours was that you were posted, like every day I would go on and see a new riff, which was amazing because like I'm used to seeing the Inktober stuff. I'm used to, obviously I do NaNoWriMo, so I'm used to the whole writing thing in November, but to get metal riffs on pretty much a daily basis is pretty awesome. So that made your Twitter account worth following just for that.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun. Now that I kind of gotten the handle of like, oh, how to really easily just shoot everything, edit it. It's going to be all sorts. I'm just going to dump it all in the YouTube channel and just link it out from there. It seems to be a lot easier than, okay, now I'm going to post it from my phone to Instagram and now to Facebook. You know, so a lot of learning curves. Like that took way more time than it needed to do. But yeah, I feel like it's going to further constrict my time adding like another challenge
right
to the month of October. But like I said, I'm not happy unless I'm unhappy with how much I have to do.
You know what? I think it's funny that you say that too, but I think that holds true because like I even find for myself, like today was a perfect example. Like Matt and I recorded two episodes of Secret Identity. I had videos to edit this morning. I had other podcast stuff to edit. We're doing the interview now, but then I managed to jump into a project that Jolene and I are working on and get writing done today. And like, if I didn't have 15 other things going on today, I probably wouldn't have got that writing done. But the fact that I have 15 other things going on today, it's like when you get an extra 10 minutes, when you get an extra 15 minutes, you feel like you have to be productive with it because you have so many things on this mental task list that it drives you to be as productive as humanly possible every free moment that you have. And so you get these like bursts of just creative output where you're putting out a ton of stuff, which I think is great in one way, but also really exhausting in another way.
Yes,
I don't know how to get out of that loop. Like, I just know that it feels like it works sometimes. And when you are able to look back and see that you've just made a lot of stuff, that's really kind of a cool thing. So I'm sure there's a better balance than I've ever been able to strike, but I totally feel you on that. And yeah, I mean, I would be remiss too, as we're sort of winding up here. We'll obviously put links to your website, to the SoundCloud that you mentioned. We'll put links to your Twitter as well. And when the Kickstarter goes up, we will talk about that. But I also wanted to give you a shout out and a huge thanks because we haven't been able to actually talk before tonight for the artwork that you created for the Power Chords podcast, which is the brand new podcast that Matt and I recently launched and has been going really well. And it was a blast to sort of do that with you because you completely perfectly captured the vibe that we were going for. And I think everybody that's seen your artwork for our show art has felt that, that we've sort of captured that. So I just wanted to say a huge thanks for that.
Oh, well, you're very welcome. That was easily one of the most fun things to just kind of brainstorm and work on. That's just like, I kind of felt a little guilty charging you for it.
No, not, oh my God, are you kidding me? Like I'll tell you what, when I first started writing and I, you know, had no money and, you know, I would trade, and I still to this day will like do copywriting for a friend of mine and he works on covers for me, but being able to support friends that are creative and have their own creative stuff going on is like one of the coolest things about putting projects out. And it's really cool when you can say that other people were involved in a project. And I feel like that is something like when we're at shows and stuff like that, when people come up to the table and they see the business cards or the, you know, they, you know, talk about the podcast, I'm able to say, hey, you should go check out Don's site and you should go check out this stuff. And it's kind of cool to create those other conversations because we were able to sort of do something together. And I know you're a huge metal fan and we've talked about music through Thrash It Out forever. And mm-hmm. when we get a little further into, and when you get past your Kickstarter, we will have you come onto the Power Chords podcast so that we can talk just about music, about music's influence on you as a creator, about the type of music that you like to listen to. Because one of the things that is sort of a secret spiritual successor to Secret Identity is that we're still going to talk to a lot of comic book people on Power Chords, but we're going to talk to them about metal. And so that's the cool thing, is that we're still going to continue on a lot of the creator spotlight stuff that we did on Secret Identity, but it's going to be through the lens of music, which I'm super excited about. So you are at the top of that list for guests to come on the show and talk. So we will definitely do that. But I will wait until after you've gotten through the next 2 months, because that is going to be a very, very busy time. So I appreciate you coming on, man. And it was great to chat. And we will definitely see you on Power Chords. But for now, people need to go check out your website, which is doncardenasart.com, right?
Yes.
And then at Don Cardenas on Twitter, or is it at Don Cardenas Art?
Everything is Don Cardenas Art.
Perfect.
Yeah, even the website, just because I wanted to keep it really, like, just everything's straight Don Cardenas Art across the board. So if you just Google that, everything should come up.
Awesome, man. Well, I will put links to all that stuff in the show notes. So anybody who's listening to this can go to secretidentitypodcast.com, check out the show notes for this episode. You will find links to all of that stuff. And again, I appreciate your time as you're ramping up for a ridiculously busy next couple of months. And I wish you a ton of success with the Kickstarter, man.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate you having me on. And it's great to finally talk to you. And I can't wait till we do this again.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethroughcomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.